Katie.
I'm Erica.
And this is Book Talk.
Hi, Katie. Good morning.
Hi, Erica. Good morning.
Welcome to Book Talk, your weekly podcast book club. This is the second episode about Our Wives Under the Sea by Julia Armfield. Armfeld or Field? One of
Armfield.
Those. Great. Katie, what happened in this section?
I'm going to break up the summary to our two narrators. I think it's a little bit easier to understand, and that's how the book is written as well. So we'll start with Miri, who's in present day. Things are getting progressively weirder with Leah. Miri finds her throwing up salt water, which she seems to be just consuming regularly at this point, and violently screaming in her sleep. At one point, she even feeds Leah some salt water, kind of as a reward. Her friends are trying to step in and help, but Miri is keeping everyone at arm's distance. She's going to have to face up to her part in Leah's return home as they start couples therapy together. And we realize that Miri thinks staying was possibly Leah's choice and not being fully trapped at the bottom of the ocean floor with no power, which was crazy to me. Then we flip to Leah's side. We're underwater and we're in the past. We see the crew struggling to regulate. They have no light, no patterns to help them. All of them are kind of dancing around the subject of how and why they are in this situation, trying to stay sane, repeatedly trying to just turn the submarine on while also remembering they are okay. They do have water, food, and air, but trying not to really understand how dire the situation is. We're definitely also getting a full lesson in review of the ocean layers, marine life, and what it's like in the deep sea. Was this section as scary for you? What did you think of it?
It was less scary. It definitely seems like what you were saying, they're really struggling with this tension of we're actually okay, but we're gonna die. It's like this weird undercurrent of like, right, but like, what are they gonna do? How are they even gonna get this deep, basically? So like, we're kind of stranded, but in the short term, we're doing great. It's kind of how I feel about this winter in New York City, where I'm like, wow, the winter is not here. It snowed once. I'm like, locally, this feels fine. I feel like this is good. And then globally, I feel like, ooh, it's probably bad. We should have snow. It should be winter.
It's not great.
I hope that metaphor makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I feel the same way about global warming all the time. Like, I am thoroughly enjoying that I'm going to go for a hike today on March 2nd, and it's going to be nice out. But, like, overall, I wish I was complaining about how cold it was so I knew that the fate of the earth was, like, fine. I think they feel that way as well. I also learned that submarines can – they have some sort of filter. They're not going to ever run out of oxygen. So that is interesting. That's not going to be what kills them. They're going to be able to breathe, but they do have a pretty limited supply of food, although they did say that provisions were for months. So now I'm like, that might not be cannibalism. And it seems as though they have a filtration system for the water. So I feel like now I'm like, they might be okay if they could get rescued, but I think that's what they're not talking about. It's like, how in the world are these people going to become rescued? How does Leah get home? And we know she comes home. So I cannot connect the dots of this and where they could have fallen to. Also, I'm just curious how far out, you know, into the ocean they went before they started falling. Like, how far are they from shore before they started submerging? I just know so little about how submarines and these long-term dives go.
That's probably also part of why it's so disconcerting, is because, like, they're totally fine. Like, they are okay physically and they will be okay, yet they're in the middle of this really big tragedy, and that almost, the disconnect is almost, they don't know how to handle that or how to communicate at this point. I'm just surprised that there's no protocols for what to do. Surely someone would have thought about this. Like, I'm just thinking the other side of like the movie The Martian or the book The Martian, where it's like, okay, here's what we have here, like, let's get all the food, let's start rationing, let's think about like making a schedule, let's find a way to keep time. Like, there's no clock that's battery operated in this submarine. It's just weird.
I do feel like the complete lack of provisions in light. They have torches, right? So they have some light, but they have no way. The keeping time thing is what's going to really fuck with their circadian rhythms of not being able to know when they should be sleeping or not. But I do feel like it's a little bit of this idea that as soon as they say it out loud, they then have to deal with it, which Leah says about the shower. She's like, I would like to go shower. I know that there is a shower, but also if I get there and the shower is salt water, I don't know if I'll be able to handle knowing that that resource is limited. So she's like, well, I'll just put off dealing with the worst for now. I think that's like what they're all doing. They're like, the second that we start talking about this, the second we'll realize that we're so far down, even if we ration things out and we have a schedule, like we don't have any way for anyone to find us. We are the deepest diving team. And so I think they're just kind of avoiding thinking about it because then they have to do something. In time, it seems like it's only been a couple of days at this point.
Correct.
So maybe they just need to have a little bit of shock before they kind of start actually coping with the situation.
Well, you know what you and I would do, which is let's immediately make a plan. Let's make a schedule. Let's figure out what we're working with. Let's think about what we can do. Yeah, their weird malaise is very strange that there's none of the three of them are trying to kind of figure out the best way to survive for the longest amount of time possible.
Right. And if one of them was like that, I would understand. Yelka, is that how you say her name?
I think so.
I'm assuming. I get it. Okay, we can have her be the one who really can't handle panic. But what are the other two doing? Like, no one in this group of extremely technical and smart people is like a project manager.
Well, and there's like there's no break in case of emergency, like, you know, manual that tells you what to do. It just seems like that would be the case. So I guess it's because they're in this weird, they're sponsored by the center, which it's not clear if it's like a government institution, but it definitely seems like it has a lot of bureaucracy. And it's very shady almost. It's giving a little like CIA because they were lying to Miri the whole time about when she would come back and what was really going on and telling her, oh, everything's fine. And yep, just taking a little longer than expected when it was like, okay, the submarine has sunken. We can't find it. This is like what we're doing. It just seems they're being very suspicious.
Wait, what if the center has purposely turned off all of their things, has not given them a manual to see how they'll react and survive and how their behavior will change and then how they will change when they come back up physically? They're not really monitoring Leah, as far as we know, but what if in some way they orchestrated this to understand how humans would survive in the ocean or in places with less oxygen or compressed oxygen, like in space?
I thought about that too, because they mentioned that they had built these like this sort of underground colony almost where they had astronauts go and sort of pretend to live in isolation and to like observe what happened to them. So it's possible. But yeah, the fact that they've sort of like ignored her since she came home makes me think that's not the purpose. Otherwise, they would have been like monitoring her constantly.
Yeah, because I do think when they went down, when the other astronauts went down, they knew they were only going to be down for 2 weeks. So that really affects how you actually behave because you do not think the situation is dire in any way.
Yeah. Interesting. I do. I guess what we're also getting at is I feel like there's more plot and I don't know where it is. Like, what's gonna happen, guys? Like, there must be more. I feel like the second section was a little bit similar to the first, which is I love my wife. Yeah. I miss her. I wish she was still here. We're really struggling. We don't know what happened.
I agree. I think in writing this summary, I was like, what did happen? Because really nothing compared to last time. They're still struggling. She's still readapting. And we still don't know what happened underwater. So I feel like we are in the exact same place. We do get a couple more conversations about how Miri is coping, about her realizing the grief when Leah was gone versus now her grieving who Leah was as Leah is back. Her kind of going to therapy. So what did you think about kind of digging a little bit more into how Miri is feeling in present day trying to deal with Leah as Leah is getting a little bit more unhinged?
I feel really bad for Miri. I think you can also see how her own life has been falling apart both while Leah was gone and now that she's back and how she's doing the thing that people who are struggling or depressed do, which is to push people away, which is like just the worst thing you can do. It's like, let me not answer my emails, lie to my friends, not answer the door, send people away. And even as she's doing it, she knows I need them and I need to connect and I wish I could actually tell them what's going on, or I should tell them what's going on. And yet she can't bring herself to do it. And it's really painful because you also get the sense that Leah and Miri are very codependent almost, or maybe Miri is codependent on Leah, and now that Leah is not her usual self, we're really sensing, like, missing that part of the relationship where Leah could bring other people into the conversation. She had this network of friends. She had, like, support through her.
It reminds me of reading All This Could Be Different when Sneha is really depressed and her friends, she lies to everybody and she basically does the same thing, pushing everyone away. And then eventually her friends just come through the door and they clean the house and they do the things and they're there for her. And we see Carmen attempt to do this, but also the second that Miri pushes back, Carmen's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so dumb. I can't believe I brought you a chicken. And you're like, you got to have a little more resolve, girl. She's not doing well. She's not just going to, like, turn on the light and be like, okay, I'm totally fine now that you are over here and I want to tell you all of my innermost feelings. And there's that parallel between Carmen trying to help Miri and Miri trying to help Leah, where Miri expects Leah to kind of just react to her or just wake up from what she's been through without really recognizing or reckoning with what Leah has been through, which I can't even believe Miri doesn't know. And it's just her assumption is that Leah has decided in some way that what she wanted was to be away from Miri, which might be that codependency talking through. Ugh, you know what I meant.
Yeah, I think it's actually Sam that brings the chicken, but Carmen is also struggling.
Oh, is it?
I think so, because then Sam's like, oh, I probably should have just brought you coffee and asked you if you wanted to talk. And it's like, no, I think in this case, nothing you could have brought or said or asked or done is going to help. Like, she's just, they're both just really struggling. And it's hard because it's, like, the friends are doing the right thing. They're also, Leah and Miri are going to therapy. Like, they're doing the things that I would tell them if they're my friends to do. And it's just still not working. I think Leah can't really explain what happened or articulate what's going on. And because she can't articulate it, it seems like Miri is interpreting the worst out of what happened and what it means.
Yeah, it's very weird to me that Leah and Miri are in couples therapy right now when it seems like, yes, they have things to work through, but it's all a catalyst of the fact that Leah was lost under the water for months. And so maybe Leah should be in her own therapy for a little while right. And then also in couples therapy. Like, it seems like understanding the disconnect and the how Leah and Miri used to interact and how they dealt with Miri's mom dying and all the different things is maybe not the, like, most pressing issue right now. If we were to triage the situation, it might be that Leah's consuming salt water, unable to exist in her day-to-day life, is not eating and is withering away. But we're like, what are your emotional traumas from your childhood? Like, I think we triaged this wrong.
Right. Right. She clearly has PTSD from whatever she just went through, and Mira is interpreting Leah's behavior as, oh, she misses the ocean so much that she has to go sit with her stupid sound machine. And it's like, no, she just hasn't been in silence for so long that it's like probably the sound of the ocean or the sound of the ships is like the only way she can relax or rest. It's just a different angle on it. Yeah, so I agree. They're in the wrong. It's not really the time to think about our moms. It's really seems more urgent, but the center is not helping. This is what the center sent them to.
Correct. Which is very, very interesting. I did like Miri's kind of ruminations on grief in this section. She's talking about, so there was a couple of weird Facebook groups that Miri joins, which I thought was very endearing.
So funny.
She's trying to find, yeah, community and connection. But there's nobody like her. It's such a small group of people are going through what she's going through. So she's like, should I talk to, wives of soldiers? Should I talk to this fantastical community of women who make up husbands so they can imagine what the grief would be if they were lost in space? Like, it's so interesting. She's just trying to find someone who understands how she's feeling. She never actually reaches out, but she's trying to find community and, like, reading these message boards. I think the last one for me was when she finally found one about grief that maybe was about missing people, maybe was a little bit more at least on the right track, talking about how while she's feeling like Leah's gone and she's attempting to, like, cope with that, she also is still holding out hope. So you're just suspended in this area when you cannot cope because you can't let go of the possibility and you can't really start grieving until you accept the reality of it. And so you're just existing in this space where it's, like, emotionally really difficult to do so.
Yeah, that Facebook group of the women whose husbands went to space, really hilarious.
MHIS, my husband in space, as his EB earthbound wife.
Yeah. People are weird, though. Wild. People love that, I guess. I'm glad she, I do think it's much more resonant for her to be in the group of people whose loved ones are missing, and that in-between grief where I'm grieving something, but that something is not, there's, it's not clear what I should be grieving, essentially.
I also feel like she would probably resonate even now in this state when Leah's home with people who, you know, when people go missing and then they come home, or when children are missing and they grow up and then they come home, like it seems like it should be this super happy reunion, because as the person missing them, as the people who've gone on, you've moved on with your life, but you've always held a part of them and you've, you're relatively stable. Whereas the person who's been gone is not, and probably has endured some unspeakable traumas, and reassimilating into the past lives while also accepting that you're a different person is hard for the person coming home, but I'm sure also really hard for the family that's been waiting and waiting for the person that they knew to come back, and that person is not who comes back.
Right. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of my sister's husband was in the military and did a couple of tours, and yeah, there's definitely that transition period when they come back where physically you're back, emotionally, mentally not quite, and not ready to be the father, husband, life partner yet, and it just kind of takes time. So I'm hoping over time maybe Leah will start to come back to herself, maybe she'll share a little bit more of what happened, or at least we have the benefit of knowing, or we'll see at least what happened from Leah's perspective.
I need to know what happened.
I need some more plot in this next section. I'm a little bored with this.
There's so much buildup. Yeah, this next section better be plot heavy. I need to meet some ocean characters. I need things to go crazy. I need someone to shake the submarine. I need something to happen.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out. Talk, talk.
Talk, talk.
I read Tana French's book, Into the Woods. This is a murder mystery set in Ireland with some detectives working the case. Sometimes I feel like you just need a good murder mystery book, a whodunit that you're trying to figure out, cast of characters, likable detective. After I read that, I started watching Mayor of Easttown, which also very similar.
Yes.
It was fine. I don't think it was that memorable, but it was a good, intriguing read.
All right. Did you read anything else this week?
I also finished An American Marriage.
Reading? Oh, yeah. What did you think?
By Tayari Jones. I really liked most of the book. I think it kind of drags on towards the end. So the story is about this husband and wife who the husband gets wrongfully accused and is imprisoned. While he's in prison, his wife ends up having a relationship with one of their friends. And then he gets out of prison and is sort of like, what do we do now? I think it was good. Yeah, I don't know. It was okay. I get why you didn't love it.
Yeah, I think I felt
like
the same way.
A little bit more missing.
Yeah, I felt like it was fine. I read the whole thing. It was fine, but I didn't feel like it was like memorable or emotional enough. I just feel like there's so much potential with that as the plot story that it just kind of fell short for me of what it could have been.
Right. And Celestial, the wife, is such an interesting, powerful, beautiful, independent, creative person, and I think you end up really believing in her as being totally kind of her own, and these two men as sort of vying for her attention. But then in the end, it's a little strange that she, well, I won't say what happens, the choices that she makes come off as a little strange, I think, because ultimately I feel like she is more than both of them. I guess that's how I left it. I kind of felt like I just didn't buy either love story, I guess, with her.
Right.
I feel like she was just like an independent boss bitch in a good way.
Correct. I just wasn't fully bought into either story. I wasn't like rooting for anyone except for her.
Yes, exactly. I was rooting for her. I wanted her to have more of a real love story, and maybe we just don't get enough of that part from either relationship she's in. That I feel like both relationships, I was like, I feel like she's kind of settling.
Yes. That's why I feel like this plot could be very interesting if somebody that you had this like really amazing connection with on either side of it, like it'd be like clear, maybe both of them or maybe one of them was this kind of like great love of your life. And I think it's just, it's an interesting idea to start a book from. I just don't know that this was the one that I loved about that idea.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyways, that's it. And then I'm going to get back into Bear Town soon. That's my plan for my next book.
Yay. I didn't finish any. I'm still reading what I was reading last week. So I haven't picked up Cult-ish again, but I'm still about halfway through that one. And then I'm reading Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. And it's really good so far. It's written from the perspective, at least this first section, of Demon, who's a child actually born by the name Damon, to a teenage mom, a single mom, who's currently living in a trailer in Appalachia, I think in Southern Virginia. But I could be wrong about that exact location. So right now we're just kind of in his childhood with his friends and his kind of surrogate family that's taking care of him. So I love the writing style so far. I think he's probably maybe a young teenager at this point. And so it's a little bit chaotic and also hilarious and very, very endearing. So I'm excited to keep reading it so far. I feel like it's a 600-page book, which I didn't mean to pick up, but you also threatened me that you're going to take home when you come in March. So I'm going to do my best to read it because it is long. I think it's going to be kind of like an epic of this part of people growing up in Appalachia.
So that book is supposed to be related to or like a commentary on the book David Copperfield.
Yes.
Which is a Dickens book, which I've never read.
I've never read either. And I did read that you didn't need to have read that to read Demon Copperhead. So we shall see. But is David Copperfield the epic story of a boy growing up, like his kind of life story? Is that the premise of it?
It says that this book builds on the narrative structure from the Charles Dickens book, David Copperfield. So it's something about it is related.
Okay, so yeah, the most autobiographical of Dickens' works, David Copperfield tells the story of David's journey from birth to maturity, a journey that inextricably links his life with Dickens' most extraordinary and colorful families. So I think it is this person's story as well. It's just like a modern day version of it.
Interesting.
We shall see.
Sounds fun. Okay. Fun. Well, happy reading.
Happy reading. See you next week.
Book Talk is made by me, Erica Bailey, and Katie Cheney, with production support from Dan White. Our theme music is by Dan White. We'll see you next week. In the same woods where then this murder happens. So
oh my God. Sorry. Hold on. Go ahead.
What was that?
I was trying to get to my book note and the Snapchat opened. It was someone's child screaming. I don't even know whose child it was. But I am terrified to open it again. Haunting.